Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Thursday to you. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFUK. Lots of things going on. Lots of things on the docket today. I'll tell you what we're going to run through. Today officially set the stage for California, rather, to become a sanctuary state with the signature of Edmund G. Brown Jr., the governor of the state of California, who signed SB 54 into law, effective, I guess, it's the 1st of January of 2018. We'll talk about that. And it's interesting because some of the things we're going to discuss today, I think, are very illustrative of the concept that how steadfastly you believe in certain legal principles or fundamental foundational principles depends upon your opinion on different issues. If you recall, the whole issue of states having a role in immigration law became a hot topic after Arizona established their version of what they saw as an improvement that was Arizona's SB 1070 that would have given state and local law enforcement officers the authority in the state of Arizona to enforce existing federal immigration law. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and it got shot down because that's the sole purview of the federal government. Well, now the state of California has taken its own action in a vastly different area. We'll talk about that coming up. This business of semi-automatic weapons versus fully automatic weapons. When is it too soon to talk about solutions or efforts to minimize the likelihood of another mass casualty, mass murder incident, such as what took place in Vegas over the weekend? We'll get into that and maybe shine a little bit of light on it and perhaps cut through some of the emotional reaction to it and really truly look at kind of the evidence, what's in play in terms of what can be done from a legislative perspective to influence behavior of people in the future. Understanding that the action undertaken by this guy, this cowardly killer, whose name I refuse to utter, on Sunday in Las Vegas, it was a capital offense in the state of Nevada. So there was an abundance of law to discourage the ungodly acts he engaged. Nonetheless, there are those who want to apply additional regulations suggesting that a person who is bent on mass murder would comply with the law. I can understand if you believe that the law would create an environment in which the ability to actually effectuate that plan would be struck down, impossible, then that perhaps would make some sense. But we'll get into some of the details on that in specifics. And again, look at it from an evidentiary-based perspective and see what kind of wisdom can come from that. But first, there's a story out of Sacramento. Just this Tuesday at the city council meeting, where local veterans took a knee at a city council meeting to protest injustice in the United States. This is trending big on Twitter. And here's the story. During the Pledge of Allegiance Tuesday evening at Sacramento City Council chambers, some military veterans took a knee to show solidarity with the athletes who have been kneeling during the national anthem to protest racism and police brutality. There again, I think it's important to look at the numbers and the trends. What's really true, look at the hard data, some of which is has been published by the California Attorney General. Hard, legitimate, realistic numbers that tell a story as to law enforcement treatment of minorities and other criminal offenders. And I think it's very illuminating to see that much of what they're protesting, and by the way, nobody should stand for, nobody should tolerate racism or mistreatment of people, certainly not a violation on the part of those entrusted with that special bond to protect the public. So in terms of being outraged by brutality at the hands of law enforcement, absolutely, I understand that. And I have personally taken the most severe action one could take against somebody doing that sort of thing, and that is abruptly ending their career. And in some cases, taking it to the DA for prosecution. So I don't stand for that either. We're in agreement on that. But I think know the facts. Know whereof you speak before you engage in something that's clearly a right to express yourself. The perspective of these veterans, they say, we've served our country. We didn't serve it to support racism. We didn't serve it to support police brutality. these things that are un-American. That's according to John Reiger from the Sacramento chapter of Veterans for Peace. I'm not familiar with that organization, but I can draw certain conclusions based upon their name. The veterans who participated say this action make it clear that they believe the athletes who kneel are not opposed to the military. There is a former San Francisco 49er quarterback whose name I don't utter out of sheer disrespect and contempt for him. I won't do it. Don't like the man one bit. Don't have to say his name, so I won't. He started this practice last year, taking a knee during the national anthem to protest what he sees as police brutality. While some athletes joined in with him, the protest reached a fever pitch just 2 weeks ago when President Trump said that NFL players who take a knee should be fired. Since then, Mr. Trump sparred with athletes on Twitter, posting that athletes should stand to respect our flag and our country. The protest spread outside the NFL to the NBA, the Major League Baseball, and even musicians who have taken a knee in protest. A high school football coach in Texas actually kicked two players off the team for taking a knee during the national anthem. So here's my poll question for you. And by the way, this is tracking on Joe Michael's Twitter account also, Radio Joe 1530. But you can find my blog, my poll question, on my page at kfpk.com. And I'll give you some options. What do you think about these veterans doing that? Do you outright oppose it? Do you agree with them? Or do you support their right to do so, but disagree with their message? And just to point a couple of things out here, the First Amendment has been invoked by many, completely and totally improperly and without the slightest knowledge of what the First Amendment means. What the president suggested, and I wish, frankly, that he had separated himself from his role as the commander-in-chief and the leader of the government and just simply said, I, in my personal capacity, believe it's wrong, and if I were a team owner, I would take swift action to fire anybody who engaged accordingly. But I don't think he ever intended to suggest that it should be the role of the government to sanction athletes working for a private enterprise, such that it is. I mean, it's their employer. But the First Amendment protects us from the government, from the government constraining our right to express ourselves. So these veterans, or anybody else, they certainly don't have to be veterans, who choose to take a knee at a city council meeting are absolutely, they are exercising their First Amendment rights. They are in the city's house, the place where city business is done, where city ordinances are crafted, where the budget is approved. All that affects the city of Sacramento, that's the hub of their activity. And they have an absolute right. That is explicitly protected speech. And I, for one, support their right to do it. I could not disagree with them more. For the life of me, I cannot understand how, especially a veteran with that perspective, would not recognize the fact that you support and respect the flag and what it symbolizes, and then recognize the fact that you have a right, and what some could argue a duty, to express those cases in which you think things are wrong. So those are your options on the poll page. I strongly encourage you to take a look at it. This Twitter account is approaching 2 million hits. So take a look at it. Let your thoughts be known. We can talk about that a little bit when we return. We've got other business to take care of and much, much more to get to. So coming right back with you at 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. More conversation coming up right after this.
The KFBK Afternoon News with Kitty O'Neill, with traffic and weather together every 10 minutes. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KPK. I got a few calls I want to get to on this, and then I also want to get into other things, this being the veterans at the city council meeting. And this is, I don't think these are random. In fact, I know they're not random veterans, probably not representative of the ideology or thoughts of most veterans. I think it's safe to say that these are veterans for peace, and not every veteran sees things the same. Obviously, look at, wasn't it John Kerry that threw his campaign ribbons, tossed them in some ceremonial fashion to show his disgust with the military, not happy with his having served. So not everybody's the same. It's not a monolithic group, which is, you know, probably a pretty safe way to perceive most groups. But also, I want to get to, before too terribly long, I want to get into this sanctuary state issue and also the business of gun control and when to start talking about that. And you might be surprised as to how I feel about when those things should be discussed. Let's get your calls. Let's check in with Mike in Camino. Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation, sir.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You
yeah, I just had one comment, and according to the poll, sure, I guess under the Constitution, they have the right,
sure,
particularly if they've been discharged, but they also broke their oath because they swore to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They don't swear an oath to the president. They don't swear an oath to a person.
No. But I'll play devil's advocate. How are they turning on their oath to support and defend the Constitution by expressing themselves?
Oh, I'm not sure. Not by expressing themselves.
Okay.
But obviously, I don't think they understand their oath or understand the Constitution and understand the bigger picture.
Since this whole issue has kicked off, I got to say that I think I have heard a lot of misunderstanding about the Constitution. Most notably that the members of the NFL and other players on professional sports teams have a constitutional right to do what they do. Well, they do have a constitutional right to express themselves, but they do not have a constitutional right to play in the NFL. And that's where their employer can separate them from service if they fail to comply. And there's a list of things that the NFL has not allowed, to include Tim Tebow taking a knee in a different way to pray. That was disallowed. Tim Tebow also put John 3:16 on his eye paint, glare-resistant eye paint, and that was disallowed. The Dallas Cowboys sought to put memorial stickers for the Dallas police officer after the ambush on the Dallas PD that killed five officers last year. They wanted to have memorial stickers for them on their helmets. That was disallowed. So the NFL is all about controlling and restricting the expression of the players. And they have a right to do that, even when it's things that I think are very, very nice things to do. They have a right. They're the employer. They can do that. The Constitution has no application there whatsoever. But for people showing up at a public meeting at a city hall, I would defend their right to do it. I disagree with them steadfastly. I think it's absolutely counterintuitive. Support and respect the flag and what it symbolizes, and part of what it symbolizes is the Bill of Rights and their right and your right, my right, to express ourselves as we see fit within parameters, as long as it doesn't violate the law, as long as it's not tantamount to a terrorist threat or a criminal threat or something that has a predictable likelihood of causing injury to some other person, not hurt feelings. But that's what the Constitution stands for. Again, their particular course of action in this application, I think, is misguided. But I wouldn't seek to stop them from doing it. I just think they're dead wrong. So, salute the flag that they defended and express yourself as you see fit. And again, drill down and learn a little something about the facts and statistics as it relates to law enforcement use of force. And you may be surprised. They may already have nothing to be upset about. Hey, I appreciate the call very much. We're going to take care of some other business real quick. Like, we'll be back with more conversation right after this.
We'll have the latest on the investigation into the mass shooting in Las Vegas. And, of course, because tomorrow is Friday, we'll go to the movies with Big Al Sams. Coming up on the KFBK Morning News tomorrow morning.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. We've got to get to sanctuary state status here in a moment, but I do want to just get another call in on the protesting veterans for peace specifically. And by the way, there's a photograph also on my blog, johnmcginnis.com, John McGinnis page at kbk.com. And by the way, I just talked with Joe Michaels. This is up to 2 million hits now. So let your voice be known on this. What do you think of it? And take a look at the photograph, and you'll see a couple of things. You'll see others in the crowd standing with the appropriate, what I believe to be the appropriate, the protocol, certainly, for reverence for the national anthem. And then you see the protesters doing what they do. One of the things I really want people to understand out of this is distinctly different than a person who is wearing the uniform of their employer and refusing to comply with, by the way, what is written rules in their book, the NFL book. There's an expectation. They stand at attention, stand with reverence, with their helmet under their left arm and their hand on their heart. That's the protocol. They're breaking their own rules, and they're being allowed to do so. But if some step off the reservation and break other rules with regard to expression, they have been sanctioned for it. Now, I think there should be consistency, and I have chosen personally to simply just not pay any attention whatsoever to the NFL because of what they have done. And guess what, guys and gals? I don't miss it. Still watch college ball, still follow high school ball, but I have not watched a minute of NFL football this season and only the Super Bowl last year, and I don't miss it. I'm doing just fine with that. Let's check in with Michael in Carmichael. Michael, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation, sir. Thank you for holding on.
Hey, Sheriff. So first and foremost, thank you, and to thank everybody else in the United States that ever wore a uniform honorably.
Thank you, sir.
They do a great service to us all. I wore one once for over a decade, and I swore my oath to protect and defend the Constitution as well.
Yep.
I will go to my grave, even though I'm just a veteran. I will go to my grave.
No such thing as just a veteran. You've served, and we owe you a debt of gratitude.
Thanks, sir. But I will go to my grave protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States of America. While I was active duty, the UCMJ allowed me to exercise my rights, and it allowed me to protest. It just disallowed me to protest in uniform.
Right.
So, because by protesting in uniform, that's directly representing the service, the branch of service that you're in. We weren't allowed to do that. We were allowed to protest all we wanted as long as we were in civilian attire. We could say we were in the service. So that the supporting and defending the Constitution and exercising their rights are two distinctly different.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And I think those veterans were well within their rights to go in there and voice their concerns as long as they weren't wearing the uniform of the United States service.
Yeah.
There
is an absolute distinction, and this is that's why I'm kind of happy this story came up, even though I find it's kind of sad, frankly, that they would choose to do this. I defend their right to do it. I would literally stand up for their right to do that, even though I don't appreciate it. I don't like it. But it is so distinctly different from what the NFL players and others now have done. When it's tantamount to if you're working for UPS and sporting some kind of a pin or shirt or garment that criticizes UPS, certainly they can disallow that under penalty of termination from employment. You couldn't wear a FedEx shirt or something supportive of FedEx or some other competing enterprise while working in their employ. And it's the same thing with the NFL. If they set the standard and say you shall not do that, you shall comply and behave in a certain fashion under penalty of termination from contract, then that's the reality, and I think they have to comply with it. So the NFL has been very, very weak in not doing what I believe they should do, what they have an obligation to do, but it's their choice. See, they can do that too, and I think you look at Anheuser-Busch now, Budweiser, and they're taking a close look. They have a hotline set up for people to call to voice their concerns about this, and they're the biggest supporter of the NFL. When that gets in peril, and you have empty seats in the stadium, and viewership on television is down more than 10% now, that, I think, could affect change. But none of that is representative of a constitutional right. That's business.
Yes, sir. I agree 100% completely. I don't think any of those guys should have jobs,
yep.
Or at least they should be reprimanded in some sort of way. That's unacceptable.
Absolutely.
Somebody else's uniform.
Anyway,
I just wanted to let you know that us veterans and us military active duty, the oath does stand 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
But we still are well within our rights to exercise our rights. We're not stripped of those rights.
Absolutely. You're the people that defend those rights, and you should certainly therefore have an option to exercise them, simply not under the color of uniform. Yep. I agree with you, Michael, and I appreciate the call very much, sir, and thank you for your service. I want to talk a little bit about the sanctuary statehood, which is, I find, very, very interesting. And again, we're going to talk about a couple other things as we work our way through the program that I think are illustrative of this idea that you see a kind of people standing on principle as long as the principle works on their side. The governor of the state of California now has signed into law, effective next year, California, although he doesn't like the term, he sees sanctuary differently, and I respect that he understands sanctuary means something different. He gets the concept of what sanctuary really means, and this is not sanctuary. Nonetheless, that's the term that's been applied to it based upon what's gone on in San Francisco, Sacramento, Los Angeles, and other venues across the nation. But now he has made it official by signing this legislation. Effectively, Senate Bill 54 becomes law next year, a move that gives the nation's most populous state another tool to fight President Trump. That's what it's all about. Governor's signature means that police will be barred from asking people about their immigration status or participating in federal immigration enforcement activity starting January 1. Well, that really, truly is hollow because they hadn't been doing that. Jail officials will only be allowed to transfer inmates to federal immigration authorities if they have been convicted of certain crimes. That's a mistake. I think a gigantic mistake. And under penalty of what for those who break that rule? That's an unanswered question. This is the governor had a statement with this. He said, these are uncertain times for undocumented Californians and their families. And this bill strikes a balance that will protect public safety while bringing a measure of comfort to those families who are now living in fear every day. I respectfully disagree, Governor. I think you know better, too, Governor Brown. You absolutely know better. And that means you're being disingenuous. And there's another word for that. We call it a big old fat lie. It was one of several immigration-focused bills that Brown signed today, which was also the final day for young immigrants to renew their permits under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, also known as DACA, that protects them from deportation. The president intends to end the program if Congress doesn't act on it. And we know that that's going to get resolved. At least I believe it will be. California is currently home to an estimated 2.3 million immigrants without legal authorization. Now, there's a bunch of things that that haven't been really widely published in this in terms of what it does that I see as problematic. And it is not supported, not at all, by the U.S. Justice Department. And in fact, Devin O'Malley, a spokesman for the U.S. Justice Department, said, the state of California has now codified a commitment to returning criminal aliens back onto our streets, which undermines public safety, national security, and law enforcement. Mr. O'Malley, unlike Governor Brown, is speaking the truth. He's absolutely correct. The state has now codified a commitment to returning criminal aliens back onto our streets, which undermines public safety, national security, and law enforcement. It's absolutely true. And I think this is reprehensible. Another part of this is there are requirements that law enforcement, this is one of the very few things that California law enforcement or all state law enforcement was required to do for a long period of time, and that is report to the Department of Justice those cases in which major narcotics cases result in an arrest where there's evidence to support that illicit narcotics, drugs, have come across the border, have come from any other country. That is shall be reported to the federal government, mandatory language under the law. So it puts a conflict in for California law enforcement as to whether or not to comply with the federal law or the state law. So what will come of that? What will happen to federal grants that have been issued? There was a period of time in which I was administering federal grants for 300 officer positions in Sacramento County, 300 patrol positions engaged in specialized policing in communities throughout the county were federally grant-funded. I don't know what the number is today. I don't know, but I know how there are many. I'm sure the Sacramento Police Department and other law enforcement agencies in the region have significant grant-funded positions. Those that are already awarded and in place and the funds are here, I believe are safe. But you may rest assured that as future grants are pursued, there will be specific language that will say they shall not be rewarded unless there is absolute compliance with federal law to include immigration law. If that doesn't happen, the grants don't come. If the grants come and there's a violation of those conditions preceding to the acceptance of the grant, the money will be taken back. It's bad. It's absolutely flawed. That makes no sense whatsoever. It's reprehensible and shameful. People are sending notes asking, why didn't we get to vote on this? This is representative government. Know who your elected legislator is and what they did with this, and therein lies the problem. And the governor, who indicated strongly he was not going to sign this into law with a few tweaks to satisfy it, to satisfy his concerns, signed it into law today, and it's done until it's challenged. More conversation coming up right after this. Don't go away.
First for breaking news, 24/7. Depend on it. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you on News Radio KFDK. We're going to try to get your calls here quickly, but I want to share a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, with regard to the sanctuary statehood law now, this was initially opposed by the California Police Chiefs Association, the California State Sheriff's Association, and the California Peace Officers Association. The police chiefs have modified their position after some concessions. They don't support it by any stretch of the imagination, but they no longer have an official opposition to it. Understand that the police chiefs, good people, but they work mostly at the pleasure of city managers. The state sheriffs are the 58 duly elected constitutional officers who have a greater opportunity to voice their beliefs and concerns with independence and autonomy. And the California Peace Officers Association, which, by way of full disclosure, is an organization that I represent, is made up of 25,000 sheriffs, police chiefs, patrol officers, detectives, and everybody in between. So they steadfastly oppose it as well. So it's there was a lot of people who follow this, who know what it will do, who have firsthand experience of what this is going to do, that actively oppose it. And nobody, none of the people who are directly affected by this in terms of implementation support it. Nobody. Don't misunderstand the Police Chiefs Association. They do not support it. They simply have dropped their active opposition to it. Very quickly, I want to mention this other concept because I think it's very illustrative of this concept of kind of bending the extent to which you stand on principle based upon what you want. This has to do with the reaction after, of course, the god-awful massacre in Vegas, where mostly people on the left, have come out and called for legislation to outlaw what was done there. Well, there's some silliness just inherent in that statement. It was abundantly illegal to massacre these people, whether it was with gunfire, with a truck bomb, some other explosive device. Whatever the case may be, it is abundantly illegal, and there's no question about that. So to suggest that making something else that was an instrument that was used, one of several, by the way, that was in the possession apparently of the killer, illegal, referring specifically to this so-called bump stock, that's something that can be made with a 3D printer very, very easily, and any competent gunsmith can transition a semi-automatic weapon to a fully automatic weapon with very, very, very little difficulty. My understanding is there are 300 million firearms in this country, and that's in a nation of about 320, 325 million people. There are a lot of firearms out there. There's a proliferation of firearms, and the idea that you can cause those to disappear when the ability to make them has never, ever, ever been easier is a mystery to me. So people looking to just take quick action, I think, have done just that. As to whether or not it's too soon to do that, I don't think it's too soon. And I think it's a conversation to be had. And it's one that we're going to have tomorrow because we're out of time. That's it for me, as you can tell by the sound of music. But stick around because the lovely and talented Kitty O'Neill is coming up next with the afternoon news. I'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll talk about gun control and bump stock. All that tomorrow and much, much more. Have a great evening. So long.